Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Vilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I'm the tech editor here at HowStuffWorks.com. Sitting next to me, as usual, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
I have the swine flu.
Actually, yes. Yes, he does.
Yeah, that's... I'm beyond the contagious stage, but if you guys think I sound a little weird, or maybe even sounded weird in past episodes, because the episodes we recorded last week, I was already coming down with it, that's why. And I can report that it kind of... is awful.
It's very much like the flu.
It is, except that apparently I now also have the uncontrollable urge to lick pigs.
All right.
So and that of course leads
I'm not going
directly.
To touch that.
Yes, I was about to say it leads directly into our topic. Now I don't have a listener mail for this specifically. We did have a request for this topic, and it was from a listener.
Oh, okay.
And it did arrive in mail. But our listener, Thomas, sent in several requests for different tech stuff podcast episodes, right?
Right.
Like he had about five or six different topics listed. And so we're just going to tackle one of those today. And that one is touchscreens.
Yay.
And of course, touchscreens are becoming more and more ubiquitous, you know, ever present, all over the place.
Yep.
Because of things like smartphones, you got a lot of cell phones out there that now have touch screens. You've got things like the iPod Touch.
Yep.
And Zoom
ebook
HD.
Readers. Sony has an ebook reader now.
Right. That has a touch screen.
Yep.
So yeah, there are a lot of them
Nintendo
out there.
DS.
And of course, then there are always the other ones that have been around for ages.
ATMs.
ATMs. Yeah. Good example.
Vending machines.
Vending machines. I always think back to, Epcot. The old days of Epcot where they would have a computer screen and you could walk up to it and touch the computer screen and pull up information about the park and about, you know, the different aspects of the park and make reservations. And this was back in the early 80s, you know, when Epcot first opened. And back then a touchscreen seemed like frickin' science fiction to me.
It was
pretty amazing because you didn't have to have like any sort of keyboard to get it. And in fact, that was even before computer mouse had become really a commonplace item.
Yeah, you know, some of those early touchscreens, at least the ones that I used, were sort of like touch screens.
Punch, punch, cry, mop up blood. Yes, those were the
stupid thing doesn't work.
Yeah, the technology has improved somewhat.
No, it has considerably.
Now, there are different touchscreen technologies that are commonly used today. The two most common when it comes to things like portable electronic devices, so things like MP3 players or smartphones or whatever, would be resistive screens and capacitive screens.
Yes, yes.
All right, so let's talk about the differences between these two systems, since these are the most common that you'll find out there.
Okay.
A resistive screen or resistive system, it consists of several layers of screens.
It's like an onion of screens.
Yes. And the way that this system works is when you press upon the screen, you compress these different layers together. And when they touch, it creates an electric circuit.
Right. Normally there are spacers that keep the layers apart.
Right. If those spacers were to be damaged and the screen were to permanently be fused together, you would lose your resistive capabilities. It would constantly be detecting a specific point of pressure somewhere on the screen.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So the spacers are very important.
Because basically where you're touching the computer is able to tell basically the coordinates
right.
of where you're touching, and then, you know, maps that up to what's being displayed on the screen, and that's how it knows what you're touching and when.
Right. So there's a processor that is it's receiving this information mm-hmm. based upon where the different layers of the screen are touching, and that way it can give the correct response. So, for example, if you have a phone that has a resistive screen, touchscreen, and you're pushing the call feature, mm-hmm. then it's going to map out the location of the touch, send that information to the processor. The processor says, hey, when this particular area on the screen is touched, that means that this action must be performed, and your phone makes a call. And this all happens very, very quickly.
The ankle bone is connected to the foot bone.
Something like that. And old resistive screens had a few big disadvantages, really, compared to the other type, the capacitive screen.
Do tell.
One of those was that the different layers would somewhat obscure the light coming from the screen. So you would only get a certain percentage of the light coming out of the screen that you would get if the screen were completely, you know, clear or transparent.
The layers had to be really thin.
Yes.
In order for this to work properly.
Right. And some of them could detect things like the amount of pressure that you used, and really the amount of pressure was coming from not how hard you were pushing, but how much surface area of your finger or other whatever it was in contact with the screen. And that could give it an indication of how hard you're pushing, because the harder you push, the more of your finger is going to be against the screen.
So that whole punching thing, not really effective.
No, that would be a bad idea. It's okay. Pretty much a guarantee that you're going to break your resistive or any other touch screen. The other disadvantage was that early resistive screens couldn't do multi-touch.
Hmm.
They were not capable of accepting two different points of contact at the same time, and could not interpret that as a legitimate command.
Right.
Now, of course, we've got a lot of devices out there that support multi-touch now, and most of those are using capacitive screens. However, I can report
mm-hmm.
it is possible to create a resistive touch screen that supports multi-touch. You have to create a system that specifically supports this. You know, it's not just like any resistive screen could do this with a firmware update.
Mm-hmm.
You'd actually have to go through the manufacturing process. But Engadget has a video on their site of a pretty cool device. It really was a concept prototype where it's a resistive screen. It could detect pressure, and it could detect multi-touch. One of the advantages of the resistive system to the capacitive system is that you don't have to – you can use pretty much anything to mm-hmm. contact the screen and give a command.
So it doesn't have to be your finger. It could be a stylus.
Right. It could be anything because
– Or a dog.
It could be a dog. Yes, it could be a rock. It could be some Play-Doh. It really doesn't matter, because as long as it is able to make that pressure against the screen, that's going to count as an input. Now, capacitive screens are different. Now, they actually have a layer that stores an electrical charge in them.
That would be the capacitance layer?
Yes, thus the name. Kind of makes sense now, doesn't it?
Amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the capacitive layer is, storing electrons.
Right. So it's storing these electrons right there on the screen. When your finger comes in contact with the screen, this actually ends up transferring the charge to you. So technically, you are kind of getting a very mild shock.
I find that revolting.
Do you? I thought you'd get a charge out of it. We can do this all day, Paulette.
Oh, I know. And our listeners are
will depart cutting like lightning.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. Oh, that was especially
well, it's
nice.
A shocking kind of experience as to have as to
you,
listen to this.
As long as you stay current.
Oh.
But, you know, I could tell that my iPod Touch has a capacitance screen because I'm stopping.
I'm hurting. Oh, go ahead.
Because, you know, sitting out and waiting for the bus or the train to bring me to work here in the morning in the wintertime – and having gloves on, you can't change, you know, the volume on your iPod because, you know, my bare skin, you know, the gloves won't
right because they aren't conductive. The charge. They won't pick up the charge like your skin would.
Yes, which actually, is irritating when your hands are cold.
If you are,
but otherwise,
if you are outside on a really cold, dry day, you might have problems getting that capacitive screen to work at all. Capacitive screens work best when there's at least a little bit of humidity to help conduct that electricity.
Well, it's a good thing we're in the South.
Right, yeah. But if it were a really cold, dry day, you might find that your touchscreen's not very responsive. It's not necessarily because your phone is cold. It may be because you don't have the moisture on your finger that helps create that electrical connection. And
well, see, that's good because I like licking my iPod, so that explains why it always works pretty well.
Also explains why I have the swine flu. So anyway, the capacitive screens actually do support multi-touch if you create the right hardware and software around it.
Right.
They don't automatically – it's not like magically supports it. You have to build the system around it. And of course, if you were to build the system around it, you could very possibly engender the wrath of Apple because they patented it. They patented multi-touch for mobile devices.
That was really smart of them.
It's also incredibly mean because the Android operating system actually supports multi-touch, but it is not enabled in any Android device that I know of. Specifically, I assume I should assume it's because of this patent. And if the phones were to support multi-touch, then it could very well be, even if it's not directly in violation of the patent, I'm sure that an argument could be made, and then you've got a costly legal battle. So that would be why the iPhone is this great multi-touch device, and most other devices don't support multi-touch in the same way.
Yes.
Some of you may be yelling, hey, what about the Microsoft Surface? We'll get to that. It's a totally different animal. But the capacitive system, it detects this electrical connection, and that it's in a way does the same sort of thing as the resistive screen in the sense that it finds out, you know, it says where the connection happens on the screen. It maps that to a specific command, and then the processor executes that command.
So the big difference between the two systems is how the electrical connection is made.
Yeah.
Basically, once the circuit is completed,
right,
and an electrical connection is made, the computer on the other end figures out where it is and what it's supposed to be doing at that point.
Right, and again, with capacitive screens, you would have to use something like a finger or your nose or something that could could accept this charge from the screen. You couldn't use something that was passive like a stylus.
Or the rock, aforementioned rock.
Right. You could possibly use a dog, depending on what part of the dog was touching the screen.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like paws or nose or something.
Yes.
But
with nose, you have a different problem altogether.
At least some of us can leave a lot of finger smudges already. So, but Yeah, if you wanted to use a stylus with a capacitive screen, you would have to have a stylus that had an active point on it that could accept that charge. Otherwise, you wouldn't get anything out of it.
Right.
So that actually makes me wonder what the Microsoft Courier tablet, the prototype that we've seen a video that was more or less an animation of this prototype tablet that Microsoft is coming out with. It's got two screens and it has a touch screen interface, and it shows people flicking through with their, well, it shows an animation of a finger flicking through pages. And it also shows an animation of like a stylus writing on a page. So I kind of wonder what kind of touchscreen technology it's planning on using, if they're going to use resistive or they're going to use capacitive.
Mm-hmm.
There is another choice, but you don't see it that often in smaller devices. It's the Surface Acoustic Wave system.
Really?
Yeah. Now, this is something that you would see in more often in things like ATMs and bigger displays. But what this uses is a couple of transducers. And they are placed along the X and Y axes of the glass plate of the monitor.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever it sends an electrical signal, one transducer sends it to another transducer. And there are reflectors on there to kind of reflect the signal from one to the other. When something makes contact with the screen, it disturbs that electrical wave.
Mm-hmm.
And by measuring the disturbance, the touchscreen knows where it was touched. When I say nose, of course, we're talking about a processor
the screen itself is sort of passive.
Yeah. The screen itself does not know. It's not magic and it's not sentient. Once touch screens become sentient, sexual harassment lawsuits will go through the roof because of inappropriate touchscreen interface.
Nice.
Yeah. We'll see if that stays in. So at any rate, the Surface Acoustic Wave system, is not often, for one thing, the equipment that you need in order to make this thing work is kind of, big.
Yes.
Wouldn't really be easy to miniaturize this into a mobile,
like into a
format,
MP3 player.
Right. So you wouldn't want to try and use this kind of technology in your general mobile device, because it would make it too fat, too heavy. And of course we all want sleek and stylish.
I know I do.
Well, I mean, the iPod pretty much proves that the sleek and stylish approach is really popular.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a good product anyway, but I think that the style is definitely a large contributing factor to the popularity of the iPod line. So at any rate, capacitive and resistive, that's the two that you're going to see the most often in your average mobile devices. The iPhone uses a capacitive screen.
Mm-hmm.
And like we said before, it actually can detect multi-touch. So that means that you can use gestures instead of just touching to give commands. Things like pinching, like if you pinch. Like
ow!
I'm not actually pinching Paulette. I want to make that clear. I've already made one sexual harassment joke. I am not even within pinching range of Paulette. He has barricaded himself in the corner and he's perfectly safe.
I got my blankie.
Yes, he does have his blankie. No, but like when you want to squish or enlarge a photo
right.
by doing various pinching motions, or if you're panning or whatever, mm-hmm. these are gestures.
Right.
Okay. So these are commands that your phone should, or MP3 player, or whatever,
mm-hmm.
should be able to recognize as a very general command, as opposed to open up this application. I want to use it. It's more of a, I'm manipulating something, rotating a picture, or, scrolling from one screen to another, that kind of thing. And, regular touch screens can identify some gestures as well. It's just multi-touch can identify more complex gestures.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty much the basis there. I mean, the both kinds of display or both kind of touch screens are fairly accurate if mm-hmm. they're done well.
Right.
The execution has to be there, but there's nothing about either technology that makes one far more accurate than the other.
Mm-hmm.
They're both challenging to do well, but if you do, if you do the good work, then either one should be more than accurate enough for the average user. The resistive screens are much cheaper. mm-hmm. than capacitive screens.
Yeah.
Capacitive seems to have the probably more support among the technology savvy crowd. They seem to like the capacitive screens more, probably because of things like the old resistive screens were harder to, you know, it was harder to see the images. They weren't scratch proof. They could get scratched pretty easily because the screens had to be, you know, soft enough for you to press them in a little bit.
Right.
But if you're concerned with manufacturing a device that's going to be an inexpensive one for your customers, then the resistive screen is a more attractive approach because it's less expensive for those components.
Right.
If you're doing a premium product, capacitive is probably the way to go.
Yeah. Well, it seems like, you know, over the past few years, with the ubiquitousness of these devices, it's harder to find the implementation done poorly. Like, it seems that more and more people are getting it right, which is what's making, you know, applications for these devices more and more common.
And a lot of the problems with touch screens have more to do with the underlying operating system than the technology of the screens themselves.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So like older operating systems for smartphones tend to have a little more trouble with touch screens than the more recent ones. You might have an older phone that's running an older version of Windows Mobile, for example, that is not as responsive as newer versions.
Mm-hmm.
I think Microsoft's philosophy right now is, from now on going forward, smartphones running Windows Mobile will have resistive screens.
Mm-hmm.
Smartphones that will run the Windows Mobile or the Windows 7 modified
right.
operating system for mobile devices will have multi-touch and will be capacitive screens.
Right.
So that's kind of interesting that they've actually developed two different strategies and each one focuses on a specific technology.
Well, it makes sense that they would try to keep the cost down by using a resistive screen in a, you know, more consumer device and higher end screens.
Yeah, it's actually a pretty clever approach, I think. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
The only thing I could think of that might cost them more money down the road is by having the complexity of having another system in another device. And it's another thing they have to tool up for and another thing they have to support.
Yeah. Well, they've also got issues with their Windows Mobile store and... There are a lot of things.
What? There are issues?
There are a lot of things Microsoft has to look at. Yeah.
Never any issues with technology.
I was going to mention also that Research in Motion, also known as
RIM,
the company behind BlackBerry,
mm-hmm.
they filed a patent in January 2008 for a hybrid resistive capacitive screen.
Mm.
It would have both resistive and capacitive layers. I tried reading this patent to figure out how it would work for this podcast, and I think I would need another 3 or 4 days to really get through it to understand it. I can't even pretend to go into the science behind it because...
So part of it is written in Martian?
Well, it's written in patentese. And, patent
okay, so
ease
it's a level of difficulty above Martian.
It's slightly more difficult than Martian. And then I said we were going to talk about the Microsoft Surface.
Oh, so yes,
talk
that's
about
right.
That very quickly. So the Surface
doesn't use a capacitive or resistive scheme, does it?
No, it does not. It is, if you don't know what it is a table-like device. It has a monitor on the top of it. So you would sit down at one of these things. And it has a big screen that you can touch and manipulate things on the screen. You can have images there. You can play games. And it can detect dozens of different touch points. So it's not just, you know, two-finger touching. You could have a game where 5 people are sitting around this table and are playing a little pinball game or whatever, and each one's controlling a set of flippers.
Cool.
You know, or tons of other different applications. It does not use capacitive or resistive touchscreens. Instead, it uses cameras and an image recognition software that is in the infrared spectrum. So these cameras are pointing up from inside the device. They're pointing up at the screen surface, and they detect the points of contact and then send that information to the processor, which then, translates it into a command. The neat thing about this is you can use multiple objects on the surface and automatically transmit commands. So let's say that you have an MP3 player that can wirelessly sync with a computing device. So let's say you've got a Microsoft Zune.
Okay.
and you lay this down on the surface.
Right.
The surface of the surface. Yes. You could lay it on the screen of the surface and you could sync your device with the surface automatically just by laying it on the screen, because it would detect the shape and size of that. Say, hey, you know what that is? That's a Zune. And it just automatically has the command that when that device is placed on there, it'll sync.
That's very cool.
Yeah. So there are a lot of interesting swine flu, interesting, applications for this device.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that was, one thing I wanted to bring up, because technically that's not even, if you think of it as touch screens, it's not really a touch screen. It's really all because of the camera. Yeah. And you had a similar device you wanted to mention briefly, right?
Well, yeah, because, you know, as we were talking beforehand, I started thinking about other devices like that. And one of the ones that our friends at Stuff from the B-Side recorded, and actually John Fuller wrote about, the React Table.
Yes.
Which uses a series of acrylic shapes on a Microsoft Surface-like surface to control music. And I started thinking about how that worked. And you said basically it's the same, you know, a similar situation. You have cameras underneath the table.
Right.
And I remember from editing that yes, it's got a screen on which the shapes sit, and it's, you know, the camera is tracking where those different pieces are. And it says, okay, well, this is a circle. I know, you know, when it's a circle, it controls the beat. If it's a square, it does this. So that's very cool.
Depending on the position of those and the position and configuration of those different objects, it'll create a different set of sounds.
Yep. And you can rotate things and it knows because it's the shape and the position of the implement that it has to do a certain thing.
Yeah. I've seen similar applications which would do things like even incorporate stuff like colors. So you might have one circle that's blue and one circle that's red, and it actually translates to two different commands. So you could have multiple circles on the same sort of surface, and it would, yeah, again, mostly it tends to be things for like music, performance art. I think Bjork toured with one of these.
Yeah, she did.
Yeah. So,
my question is, if you have an instrument that's using, you know, reds and yellows, can it help you play the blues?
Let's move on.
Okay.
I'm glad that we have exhausted touchscreen, or at least I'm exhausted. but then again, I've got swine flu.
So. Yes, I mean, my puns aren't helping, I'm sure.
Let's move on to a little listener mail. This listener mail comes from Chase, and Chase is an Oregonian living in Osaka, Japan.
Wow.
He's also very verbose. Chase, I loved your email, and I responded to Chase already, so I'm going to have to sort of summarize Chase's email here.
Sounds good.
But he said that he has an iPod Touch, and he got an application called Anti-Young Free, which emits a sound that only young people or people who took very good care of their ears can hear. He says, I work at a high school, so I decided to test it out in a class of 15 to 16-year-olds. I got them all to stand up and then pushed the button to turn the sound on and told everyone to sit down if they could hear something. To my surprise, 8 of the 40 students remained standing and mystified. According to the descriptions for this app, people should be able to hear it until they are around 20 to 30 years old. I am 25 years old and cannot hear it, but my wife, who is 24, freaked out when I turned the sound on. That aside, I also discovered a number of other apps to do things like repel mosquitoes or act as dog whistles. And he wanted to know, 1, how does it work? And 2, is it doing any damage to his speakers? Let's take the second one first. Most speakers can emit sounds that are well beyond the range of human hearing. And so they're perfectly capable of doing this. Nothing bad is going to happen, on its own, because that's what speakers do. They're capable of emitting these sounds. It's not like it's suddenly ripping itself apart.
Right.
But the first part about how does it work? Well, humans can hear in a range of sound frequencies that it's between about 20 hertz and 20,000 hertz, give or take a few thousand. All depends on who you ask, really. But 20 to 20,000.
Whether you're male or
female. Whether you're male or female. And of course, as we get older, we start to lose the capability of hearing that complete range.
What?
And in general, we lose the upper ranges first. And so if you are in your late 20s, early 30s, you may only be able to hear up to 14,000 hertz or 16,000 hertz or 16 kilohertz if you prefer. But So anything above that frequency, you don't hear it. But younger people could still hear that. And in general, human beings don't like high-pitched noises. They tend to irritate us, which is, you know, why Chris likes to drown me out, I guess.
I'm sorry, were you saying something?
At any rate, so that's how that really works, is that as we age, we just naturally begin to lose that ability. And some of us lose it more slowly than others. So you may find someone who's 32 who can hear the same thing that a 16-year-old can hear, or you may find a, you know, a 14-year-old kid who can't hear anything at all from that particular range. It's very subjective. There are no hard and fast rules. But in general, if you're talking about big numbers, that's kind of how it works. Right. So thanks for writing in, Chase. If any of you have any questions, concerns, criticisms, suggestions for episodes, you can write us techstuff at howstuffworks.com. Remember, we have a live show every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern. You can find that if you go to the blogs over at howstuffworks.com. And Crispy and I will talk to you again. Hopefully, I will be talking without a raspy voice really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. And be sure to check out the new TechStuff blog, now on the HowStuffWorks homepage.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedatum. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene! Gene Fodor!
Gene, what's good?
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.